Hello and happy 2008. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the first day of a brand new year. Thanks to Veronica Rickert for filling in for me while I spent time with my family over the holidays. And we are a couple days from our broadcast from Dubuque, Iowa. We, along with an incredible number of journalists, are going to be in Iowa. It's such an event, isn't it? According to today's New York Times, more than 2,500 news media outlets have been given credentials this year, which is almost twice the number that were authorized in 2004. And there will be more than that because a lot of places are sending more than one journalist. 250 news media outlets from overseas have been issued credentials. Foreign outlets, including the BBC and television stations from Japan, South Korea, and the Netherlands, as well as most of the big newspapers in Europe. So Iowa is the place this year, and we're going to be talking about a number of issues, not only the top news stories of 2007, but because of the keen interest in the Iowa caucuses, which take place on Thursday. We'll be looking at what's going on in Iowa now, because our guest is in Iowa, in Des Moines. Julie Mason is White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle's Washington Bureau, and she has been covering politics for quite some time now. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for her as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And you can direct your comments as to what you think were the big news stories. We like to do that on New Year's Day of 2007, and also because of the interest in Iowa, what you think of what's going on in that state. Julie, hello. Happy New Year.
Hi. Happy New Year to you. It's great to be back.
You sound so darn chipper, Julie.
I was wise last night, Kathleen.
Were you?
Yes, I was smart.
You have to be smart and wise because you got a big week here, don't you?
Oh, man.
Oh, do you have a big week. Isn't it amazing? And do you feel the presence of a ton of journalists in Des Moines right now?
Well, when you go to these events that the candidates have,
yeah,
there's often more journalists than voters.
Oh, my gosh.
And a lot of times, but the sad part is a lot of times the voters do show up and they get crowded out. They can't get a place because there's too many reporters.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
It's such an unusual caucusing. It's such an unusual event to have all this international attention focused on this very peculiar way that they go about voting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very strange how they do it.
Yeah, it is very strange. Are you going to be at a caucus on Thursday night?
No, they're setting up a filing center for all the journalists to await the results, and I'll be there. But I know that some people are planning to go to the caucuses. It's kind of dicey. Like, sometimes they'll let journalists in, sometimes not.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can go and then get shut out. So people are sort of unsure.
Right. Well, the polls have been all over the place, and I don't know if they mean a darn thing at this point because of the number of people who say that they could still change their votes by Thursday evening. Today's Des Moines Register showing Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama with a lead here of 32%, up from 28% late November, Clinton at 25% and Edwards at 24%. This is the first poll that's shown him ahead by that much this close to the event. What do you make of that? Are they meaningless because of the way it happens?
Well, I think they're meaningless because we don't know who's going to show up on caucus night.
Yeah.
They poll likely caucus goers, but that doesn't mean those people are going to show up. This caucus is going to hinge for both parties on about 200,000 people in this big state. That's all that total they expect to show up. So we can't really know. I mean, that's interesting, and it does indicate that Obama has been getting some traction with his message, which has been very positive, and he's been very polished and really drawing some good crowds here. And that's what we see in the poll. Whether that translates on caucus night, we can't say.
Mm-hmm. The other outcome could be that it is indeed very, very tight, and nobody is a clear winner because it's a percentage point that divides all of these people, which could make for it on the Democratic side quite an interesting ride here. What does it mean if there's no clear front runner, Julie?
Well, someone has to get more than someone else.
I mean,
it could end up being very, very close. It just makes the later states much more important. I mean, this could be unsettled, you know, into late February, early March, which would make it a very exciting race,
mm-hmm.
very competitive, tight race. But it just means, you know, it just means that Iowa won't be the decider. President Bush is the decider, as we know.
Yeah, right.
It just makes the later contest more interesting.
And what's your gut feeling on this? Do you think that it will be a later decision?
I do.
Really?
Especially among the Democrats, it's so tight here right now. And just anecdotally, just going on what I've seen, I would have thought that Edwards would be in the lead right now. He's got all the enthusiasm. He's got all the anger. Yeah. And I don't mean like dark anger, but, you know, sort of a populist, podium thumping, brothers and sisters kind of anger that people are really responding to. And just from seeing them all, you know, and Hillary's kind of flat lately, and Obama, he's kind of the same thing, but Edwards is something different. I'd have thought that he'd be doing much better than that poll suggests.
Mm-hmm. And he's very well organized, right? You have to be if you've been there for so many years.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You just notice the little things. You go to these events. Edwards' events are staged so well. His advance people are just crackerjack, and they have the banners and all the sight lines for the TV cameras are perfect. Mm. And do you know what I mean? And
yes,
the music and everything else. It's definitely not the amateur hour with Edwards. It's very, very professional.
And I have read, and tell me if you see signs of this, that both the Clinton campaign and the Obama campaign have very sophisticated technological things in place to make sure people get there, to identify mm-hmm. who's never been to a caucus before, et cetera.
Well, that's the thing. It all comes down to turnout. So that's where they put the bulk of their organization, in just identifying people who are going to caucus and making sure they go. It's really cold here.
You're from Texas, Julie.
Well, I'm not from Texas. I lived there a long time. And, yeah, it's very warm and balmy in Texas, but especially in Houston. But here, I mean, it's 10 degrees. If the option is stay home or go caucus in some, you know, public school gym, I get it.
Yeah, right. Except it's supposed to be, I can't believe the news is now filled with what the weather forecast is going mm-hmm. to be in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be okay. It won't be 10. It's going to be a little warmer on Thursday night.
That's good. I mean, these candidates, they really they're worried about the Orange Bowl, which is the same night. I mean, they are really worried about this stuff. And the weather, they all, you know, they'll wring their hands and talk about the weather. It's just, these are important things.
I know.
Especially when it hinges on so few voters. I mean, Democrats, they hope to turn out 120,000 people. Republicans hope to turn out about 80,000. It's just not that many people.
Yeah. Tell me what's going on with Huckabee in Iowa. The polls there have shown that he's lost a lot of support. He did this ad, this negative ad that he decided he wasn't going to run, but he showed it to everybody anyhow.
Everyone was talking about it. And, you know, that's the thing. With so many journalists here and so much attention focused on these caucuses, it becomes this sort of hothouse atmosphere where something that's just kind of odd or quirky becomes the big story. Mm. And that was the case yesterday with Huckabee when he summoned journalists to a big press conference and said he had created this negative ad against Romney, and he said, "But I'm going to take the high road. I'm not going to place it on TV.
Yeah,
we're not going. But I have copies of it here for you to take with you, and I'm going to show it on a big screen." And so he wanted to have it both ways. He wanted to take the high road, but also get the bad message out. And everyone just kind of laughed at him. It's like, what are you doing? And then he also capped the day off by getting a haircut and a shave at a barbershop with, you know, 100 reporters there.
Oh, gee, Julie.
And he was taking questions while he was being shaved with a straight razor.
Ooh.
And he was lying on his back in the barber chair. And it looked like an autopsy.
Oh, my God.
And all these journalists standing around taking pictures. And he's, like, in this kind of slow, relaxed voice answering questions about his strategy while a man shaves him.
Oh.
It's just become very strange.
It sure has. He is smooth, isn't he? I saw him on Meet the Press, was it yesterday or the day before?
He's a
smooth talker.
Mm-hmm.
He really is.
And he disarms people with his humor. You know, he leavens his rhetoric with jokes, which people seem to really like.
So did he stumble badly with the comments about Pakistan and his seeming lack of foreign knowledge? I know he's tried to help himself out, brushing up on events.
Yeah, but, you know, these journalists who were covering this campaign also remembered George Bush, not even knowing who the leader of Pakistan was.
How true.
So that's the kind of thing that is you know, a one-day news cycle, and then you sort of file it away. But I don't know how much that hurts with voters. The voters here in Iowa don't really care about Pakistan. The candidates are talking about it for the TV cameras.
Mm.
The voters here, they care about, you know, more pocketbook issues.
Mm-hmm. So that their rhetoric, you didn't find when as you were going to these rallies that they were talking a great deal about foreign policy and the assassination of Bhutto?
Well, they were loving it because it gave them a chance to show off their sort of foreign policy chops. I mean, they were all talking about it. But like I said, that was more for like the national TV cameras, for a larger audience. The Iowa voters, you know, obviously they're concerned about Pakistan, but that's not their issue, you know, and so they would listen politely, but those lines weren't getting the big applause, they weren't getting the big attention. But then when for example, Hillary Clinton talked about canceling No Child Left Behind, that got huge applause.
Mm.
So, you know, they were sort of polite about Pakistan, but it's not really their thing.
So what are their issues?
Well, they are very concerned about education. The Democrats especially don't seem to care for No Child Left Behind, and they want to restore Pell Grant funding and things like that, and make higher education more affordable. For the Republicans, they're very concerned about immigration, and that's the big issue on their side. That's what they want to talk about. And all the questions that the candidates are getting have to do with how do we beat Hillary Clinton and how do we fix immigration? And mm-hmm. that's what they're talking about.
And does that resonate with Iowa voters? Is immigration a big issue in Iowa?
Well, it's an emerging issue in Iowa because they have this meatpacking industry, which has brought a lot of immigrant workers. And so there's a little undercurrent of anxiety about it here in places like Iowa and Nebraska, which is just now sort of starting to feel the pinch from illegal immigration in terms of social services and other things, so that they're definitely aware of it.
It's interesting that you talk about No Child Left Behind. I find that's true as well. When I do some speaking to groups and you talk about No Child Left Behind, there are deep concerns about that
mm-hmm.
issue, and yet it's not something that you hear on national news very often.
Right. That's because it's not. It's just not very sexy.
Yeah. Right.
and people don't seem to like it. Republicans aren't really talking about it at all. But the Democrats are definitely fired up about it. And most things having to do with George Bush and especially Edwards is hitting hard on corporate greed mm-hmm. and things like that. So their issues are all over the place. But there isn't much overlap between the two parties. You don't hear them talking about the same issues very much at all.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Edwards. You wrote a piece. Were you at the rally? Was it 2 days ago?
Yeah,
two days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what he talked about. Elizabeth was there as well, who I think is an extraordinary asset to his campaign.
Everyone loved her.
She's wonderful, isn't she?
She has the love of the people. It's extraordinary, and she's a good sport. She really is. Edwards. It was really. I had seen Hillary Clinton earlier, and she was fine, you know. She was a little flat. She was tired. He came out guns blazing. he's got his coat and tie back on because now we're getting close. You know, he's been wearing like open collared shirts and jeans and boots and that kind of thing. But now he's down to business, down to cases, and he was angry, but it was more like an indignant sort of exasperation about corporate greed and homelessness. And he talked about food banks mm. and education, and people were just stomping and cheering.
Mm.
And it was really, he really seemed to be fashioning himself into the change agent, which polls show voters really want. And it was very interesting. It was really interesting, and he kept talking about, you know, we need to beat them, we need to fight. And he talked about his background quite a bit. He added some new elements to the very familiar anecdotes about being the son of a mill worker. He added some new details to that story, which were very interesting.
He did come up from the bottom, didn't he?
Yes, he absolutely did. And he talked about his parents being very poor and often humiliated. And, you know, just for being poor and how he talked about when he was a little boy, he got in a fight and he came home and his father, you know, was very angry with him and said, I don't want to hear you being in a fight ever again. But if you are, I don't want you to ever back down from a fight,
hmm.
which is sort of words that he, you know, is now sort of transporting to this presidential campaign, saying, I'm not backing down from this fight. It was interesting. I mean, because those stories he tells are so familiar. Son of a mill worker. But when you hear him talk about it in person, it's poignant. And you can see it getting to people. They really look at him sort of with shining eyes when he talks about that.
Isn't that something? What happens if he wins Iowa, Julie?
Wow, that's huge. Because he will have defeated Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, obviously the three of them are going to line up some way. But if he comes out on top, I mean, he doesn't have their money.
Right.
He doesn't have their star power. All he has is, you know, his credentials and his message. And, well, and his wife, too.
Right.
And, I mean, it would end for Hillary Clinton, who, you know, you recall she told Katie Couric, you know, it's going to be me, I'm the one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way that would be portrayed as such a major defeat for her. It's sort of interesting to think of.
So, and you're saying that she's flat lately. The poll numbers are flat for her, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
All these people must be exhausted. I can't imagine this kind of pace, Julie.
I know. Oh. The press secretary from one campaign called the press secretary from another campaign last night and said, "Dude, I know you understand this. I am so exhausted." And they, like, talked about it and their coping strategies. And that's what it's like. I mean, it's just all day, and it's just relentless.
Yeah.
It's just got to be such a drain.
Oh, yeah.
I think after New Hampshire, they're all going to come down with the flu.
Yeah,
really? Go into South Carolina. Because you can't go at this pace and with this level of anxiety and stress without making yourself ill. And we see it every presidential campaign cycle. The front runners get sick.
Yeah.
They lose their voices, and they get the flu.
What about the other Democrats in the race, Dodd and Biden and Kucinich and Richardson?
Kucinich isn't even here. He's not even here.
Oh, that's interesting.
He's campaigning mostly in New Hampshire right now, which is interesting. Chris Dodd, he's not bringing in the crowds. He was really hitting hard on Pakistan. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was really his thing. And same with Biden. Biden's been drawing some okay crowds. It's just people don't seem to be willing to take a chance on these second tier candidates.
How important will they be though when it comes caucus night? Those who are committed to them, the chances are they won't get 15%.
Right.
Maybe they will, but then you got to negotiate to get those voters.
Right.
What's your feel about that?
Well, I think that voters who are supporting the front runners are going to use the argument that we need someone electable. We need someone who can defeat a Democrat. And, you know, members of the Senate, obscure members of the Senate like Dodd and Biden, they just don't have the juice. You know, can they run nationally? They haven't even run very well here. And so those are the kind of arguments that sort of Hillary Clinton supporters and Barack Obama supporters will use. Like, we've got the money, we've got the organization. You know, come over to us. We're going to win this.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that that kind of negotiating is already going on among caucus goers?
No, I don't think so. I
no.
don't get the sense it is. I think that the organizers are saying that. I think the door-to-door people who are, you know, contacting voters are saying, look, we're the ones who can win it. And I think the same on the Republican side as well. It's all about, you know, we're the ones who can defeat Hillary or whoever else the Democrats put up. They're not sure it's going to be her anymore.
Tell me, I read this piece a couple days ago that some of the campaigns, I think it was is Clinton's campaign, was offering, you know, special kinds of sandwiches, et cetera. If you show up at the caucus at 6:30, we're going to feed you. And let me tell you, food always draws people. And
they do use food a lot.
Yeah.
Mitt Romney has, like, whenever his campaign has an event, there's like a buffet.
Oh.
I know, and it really shows like where his money is going. Because then you go to Huckabee, and it's like a little platter of sort of dry cookies. It's just all part of the organization. You know, and Huckabee's got like crooked signs held up by string, you know, and Romney's got a whole multimedia thing with the bus, and it's very interesting to see their contrasting styles. And of course, Fred Thompson is another one. He could very well come in third among the Republicans.
Do you think so?
Well, he and McCain are pretty close, and McCain's not even campaigning here either. He's not been here at all. But Thompson's been all over the state, and people like him. They like his plain-spoken, I'm not ambitious, this is who I am. They're really responding to it. When you talk to Thompson voters, they sound a lot like George W. Bush voters. They're like, well, I just like his personality. You know, I don't agree with him on everything, but I like the way he talks.
You see, I think that's his problem. You talk about Hillary being flat right now. This guy seems to be really flat. There was all this promise for him, and he went nowhere.
I know. Someone said the other day that at an event that he talks like he's on the phone, in asides and mumbling and things like that. And he's still talking about that Des Moines Register debate incident where he refused to raise his hand. You know, that's like he's dining out on that, you know, forever. And then he just keeps talking about that and talking about that at events. And he really just, he keeps saying, I dance to no man's tune, and this isn't, hasn't been my lifelong ambition, and I think people who aspire to this are kind of nuts. And, you know, and people really like that. It's like, it's a demonization of politics and campaigns and everything, and it's, people are really buying into that. But it's like, well, then why are you running? And his answer to that was, well, it isn't because when I was a junior in high school, I thought it would be great to hear Hail to the Chief every day. That's your answer? All right.
Let's welcome phone calls for Julie. Julie Mason is our guest. Julie is the Houston Chronicle Washington Bureau Chief. She is in Des Moines right now, where it's 10 degrees. And she's been, along with many, many reporters, covering the caucuses. They're 2 days from now, and we welcome your phone calls. If you also want to branch into the what you thought were the major news issues that you would like to see candidates address in a serious way as this campaign season gets in full swing, we'd like to hear you talk about that as well. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee today, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Or if you'd like to send us an email, you could do that as well. The email address this New Year's Day and always is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we're going to be talking about the year 1908 with the author of a terrific book, America 1908, The Dawn of Flight, The Race to the Pole, The Invention of the Model T, and The Making of a Modern Nation. 1908, the author says, by whatever quirk of history or cosmology, was one hell of a ride around the sun. Julie Mason is with us now, joining us from Des Moines, Iowa, on this where it's 10 degrees, and there are a lot of journalists there, and there will be even more from all over the world as the caucuses happen on Thursday. We will be in Dubuque, as you know. Please listen to our broadcast. I'm so excited about going to. This is going to be fun. We're going to Dubuque, and we'll be broadcasting live Thursday from 9 to 11 and Friday from 9 to 11. And really, our featured guests will have candidates, of course, but our featured guests are the Iowa caucus goers who will be in the audience and will have a lot to say, I'm sure. Join this conversation. Where are you, everybody? Sleeping in today. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And we start with Paulo from Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning. Our boys and girls need positive role models. Decision 98 is huge for the future of the space program and science education. Which candidate do you think is most pro-NASA, pro-JPL? We have to continue funding the Mars rover's missions. We have to finish the space station, repair the Hubble telescope, develop the modern replacement for the 1970s used space shuttles. We need funding for the Ares V booster rocket. We have to establish a permanent manned moon base to beat the red Chinese commies, and also a manned mission to Mars for the glorious American scientific conquest of space.
Who speaks most about the future of the space program, Julie?
None of them. Absolutely. I've not heard that come up once.
I think Hillary spoke about some aspect of the space program, didn't she?
Really? No, I didn't hear her. She did, I don't know about it. And that's, you know, obviously that's an important issue for Houston, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
So we've been kind of waiting for the candidates to sort of weed themselves out and get some front runners going before demanding answers about the space program. So I don't really know. And it's just not an issue that many people are asking about.
Right. Let's talk about Barack Obama for a moment here. The key to his hoarding – it's interesting to look at the demos here. The key to his potential victory on Thursday would be independent voters, young voters coming out in huge numbers.
Yeah, and that is such a dicey strategy. I mean, as you know, Kathleen, every election cycle we talk about young voters.
Right.
And they're energized, and they've got all these issues, and then they don't show up.
Yep.
And, you know, God bless them. I don't know if I would show up either if I was a young kid, but you can't rely on them. You just can't. They just they are impassioned, but the commitment, the follow through, isn't always there. Mm-hmm. So that's very dicey. Edwards, by contrast, is relying on older voters who are very, you know, you can't keep them away on caucus night.
Right.
So that's a much more sound strategy. So his was actually a more weather dependent strategy than Obama.
Well, that's interesting. But they're also saying, this is really picking stuff apart here, but what else is there to say at this point, that if the weather is okay, which it looks like it's going to be, that it favors somebody like Obama because then the independents and the young people will be there.
Mm-hmm.
So it favors new voters coming to these caucuses.
Sure. There's something that people don't talk about that much, and it's the intimidation factor of going to the caucus. A lot of people don't vote even, you know, just ballot, regular ballot voting, because they don't know about it. It's something they don't know how to do. They're mm-hmm. sort of confused by it. Mm. Well, caucusing is that, like, on steroids. You know, you go, you have to defend your position, you have to talk, it's a group activity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anyone is in any way reticent or unsure or, you know, doesn't like to be in the spotlight, you know, I mean, not that you have to be on caucus night, but you could be. I could see where people
sure.
might be very unsure of going. And so the candidates have been doing a lot of educating voters about how to caucus and how it works and trying to demystify the process so that people, first-time caucus goers, won't be timid or too intimidated to go.
What was it I heard that the average voter, caucus voter in Iowa, has 20 times the political clout of anybody else in the country. Isn't that something, Julie?
I believe it. I really believe it. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about Iowa and how, you know, it doesn't look like America here. These are all white people. You know, they're very mm-hmm. middle class. But, you know, it doesn't look like America. It doesn't have the same issues and concerns of, say, like Detroit or, you know, or even the East Coast or West Coast. It just doesn't. But these people, they go to events over and over, and they go to, you know, I saw at a Rudy Giuliani event this week, I saw a guy with a Rudy sticker who told me he was going to caucus for Hillary. They go to other candidates' events. They're taking a look at the whole landscape. They're really into it. So I mean, if nothing else, they at least take their responsibility very seriously.
Yes, yeah, I agree. But do you not think, and it is unusual, that at the most maybe 200,000 people will play this phenomenally important mm-hmm. role mm-hmm. in the whole presidential election? It is quite remarkable.
It is quite remarkable, yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Paulo, for your call. Joe from Green Bay, hi.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. I guess my question is that, you know, hearing that I've heard more about Edwards today than I've heard in the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
They never seem to talk about Edwards. It's always been Obama and Clinton, mm-hmm. Clinton and Obama. And, you know, I'm kind of surprised and pleased to hear that Edwards is actually getting some press time now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I haven't been listening to the right stations or what. I just don't hear much about Edwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's largely eclipsed by these two celebrities.
Right.
You know, and they've just got so much money and so much attention. And so, yeah, a lot of the focus has been on them, but you can't deny that he's really come on strong. And other than this Des Moines Register poll, which came out today, most of the most recent polls show them in a three-way tie, a
mm-hmm.
statistical tie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why reporters are sitting up and taking Edwards seriously now.
Well, you know, what's going to happen the day after when they move into New Hampshire and you know, he's in third place. Is that, you know, is that his 15 minutes and then he's done again?
I don't know. I mean, I know there's 5 days, so it just depends on New Hampshire. You know, it's hard to say. That's a good question. You know, he came in second in 2004, so he could do better. If he came in first or second here, that would be a huge story.
Right. Thanks very much for the call. And I mean, I think that Joe is right, and it's interesting for you to comment on the enthusiasm of his supporters because he has been overlooked, and I wouldn't be surprised if he won Iowa.
Right.
That wouldn't surprise me.
No. It would be quite a story if he did. But yeah, it wouldn't. I mean, he could win it as easily as the other two. Yeah, the enthusiasm of his voters is extraordinary. They are they share his anger at
mm-hmm.
what's going on. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And he really touched a nerve. Hillary talks about herself and her credentials and what she will do. And he takes a different he takes a different tack. He talks about them and what they've done and how they need to be stopped. And people kind of like that. It's just a different strategy, but it seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll sure be interesting. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you,
Joe. Thanks for the call. We go to Dan from White Lake next. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm only calling because I think that the Iowa caucuses, I have to agree with those people that say they're tremendously overrated, as you've just mentioned. And as recently as last week, there was a professor on a different program on this station claiming that the total turnout would be under $80,000. 80,000 people.
Oh, that won't be the case because it was 125,000 in 2004.
Well, that's what I'm hoping, that somebody who goes down there will get an accurate picture. That's all I'm wishing. And my other comment is, if the final race turns out to be McCain versus Edwards, that will be a picnic.
It would be what? I'm not sure
a
I
picnic.
Got that. Oh, it would be a picnic.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. We put a lot of emphasis on Iowa. It's true, but winning Iowa is no guarantee of winning the nomination, as we've seen over and over. You know, Pat Buchanan won here, and you know, their own governor won here, and obviously didn't go on to win the nomination. So it's important, and it's very good to win here, but it's not a guarantor of the nomination down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, New Hampshire is a whole different ball game.
Yeah. Here's an email, and it does point to certain issues that would not be covered as much in Iowa because they don't have a huge minority population.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like candidates to address the achievement gap between minority and white children and the fact that the growing prison population is full of high school dropouts, mainly minorities. Is that being addressed in Iowa?
Not directly. I haven't really heard that talked about much. They're not talking really at that level of specificity. It's more broad themes about how bad the dropout numbers are and how education really needs to be improved and things like that. So it's a subtext, but it's not really a focal issue yet. And I think the Democrats are going to talk about that much more than the Republicans.
Yeah. What's the story on Thursday night? I've read that a lot of them are just going to get to New Hampshire even before the votes are counted. Are they splitting right away?
Yeah, they really are. They are on a hair. I mean, they've been here for a year.
Oh, gee, Julie, a year. Isn't that amazing? Oh.
I know. People here are just, I mean, the voters just, they go, and they're very stoic about it, but they're like, I just want this to be over. These people need to go. And them and then the whole press corps is on a hair, too. So.
Thanks, Dan, for your call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. Julie Mason is our guest, and she is White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle Washington Bureau, joining us by phone from Des Moines, Iowa, where she is covering the caucus. And just a reminder to you that we will be in Dubuque, which I think is a perfect location for us, at the Mississippi Mug on the banks of the Mississippi, and we'll be broadcasting live the day of the caucus, Thursday, and then we'll broadcast the results live broadcast on Friday as well. Join us for conversation here. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Dick is next from Boulder Junction. Hi, Dick.
Hi. My question for Julie Mason is, there's been a great deal of publicity about Barack Obama campaigning with Oprah Winfrey, but he's also been introduced in the last few days by a retired four-star Air Force general, a former chief of staff of the Air Force, Tony McPeak. What has been the reaction of voters and caucus-goers in Iowa to Obama being introduced by a general, a retired general?
I really haven't heard that talked about by the voters. Every candidate is introduced by someone here. Huckabee's introduced by Jim Gilchrist, the head of the Minuteman Project. And so that's more, I mean, it's more like a general just sort of burnish Obama's credentials, but people don't talk about it. It's not a matter of controversy or discussion. They're more interested in what Obama has to say.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about his rallies. Has he been packing them in Iowa the last few days?
He really has.
Has he?
Among journalists, it's, you know, there's sort of this discussion of, well, you know, you got to see Obama because it's a real show, and he really, you know, he really moves people and excites people. But his message hasn't changed much, you know. So people who've seen him go back and then they see the same thing again. But it's great political theater. It really mm-hmm. is.
Well, it is when you think about it. When you think about who's running, Julie, it's quite something, isn't it?
It is, and we've sort of become desensitized to it.
Right.
But I think when this campaign spreads out to the rest of the country, we'll be looking at it with fresh eyes as new voters look at it, and we'll be saying, "Oh, okay, yeah, we have a black man, a
right.
woman, you know, the son and the son of a mill worker, and
right.
and Mike Huckabee, and you know, whoever else is still in it." And I think we will continue to reflect on that and discover it anew.
Right. It's one of the more interesting campaigns that I can remember.
Yeah.
It just is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So people are sick of I've heard that people are getting tons of phone calls, too, all
phone
day
calls,
long, if you can
mail.
Imagine. That would bug you, wouldn't
people
it?
People knocking on the door.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Especially if they've caucused before. It's like they're being stalked.
Oh.
They're just tired of it. They're
Whoa.
Exhausted. I feel for them.
Right. Go home. They want them all to go home now.
Right.
It must be fun for a while, but it's been a long process.
These candidates have been here forever.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Diane. Thanks, Dick, for your call. Diane from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I wonder how we can get the media to stop picking our candidates. Right from the beginning, they set up Obama and Hillary to be the front runners, giving very little coverage to Dodd and Biden, even Kucinich, and this sets up a way, if you don't get the coverage, you never get to be
mm-hmm.
up there. And I think that's the media choosing who is going to be the top people to run. And I don't like it.
Julie?
Well, I think that there's quite a bit of truth to what she said. It's a vicious circle because the candidates who raise the most money and who have the highest profile get the most coverage, which then gives them a higher profile and more money.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, the second tier candidates, they get proportionate attention. Dennis Kucinich gets covered, and Dodd gets covered, not to the degree that Hillary and Obama do, certainly. But after a certain point, the media attention has to reflect where the money's going and where the polls show that voters are going. And also, it's not up to the news media to the candidates have to do the work. You know, they have to make the news and come up with the issues and their positions and things like that. And they can't sort of sit back and expect the media to promote them. They have to promote themselves to a certain degree. So I do take that on board, what she's saying, that it is a very media-driven thing. But Obama and Hillary, they raised that money not because of their media coverage, certainly, especially on Hillary. It's been very critical.
Well, and it's interesting that the race has changed somewhat, Diane and Julie, that it wasn't all that long ago that polls were showing and she was saying and people were believing and the press was saying that Hillary was inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's changed now.
Materially. Now she's sort of battling.
Right.
And that wasn't a media construct. That was people starting to pay attention to the race and changing the dynamics on their
mm-hmm.
own.
Well, money doesn't give the best candidate.
That's for sure. I agree with that.
Mm. Thanks, Diane,
okay.
very much for your call. What happened to her campaign? Why isn't she inevitable right now in Iowa?
Well, because for several reasons. One, a lot of those early numbers were based on name ID, which we also see in the case of Giuliani. It's like pollsters call around nationally and say, who do you like? And they, you know, a Democrat would say off the top of their head, well, Hillary Clinton, because they know her and they know she's running. It's more based on name ID. But then as people got to know her and as her opponents started to define her as prevaricating or waffling or, you know, slippery and calculating, that took root. And then at the same time, these other candidates started doing well and showing that they had credentials and they could challenge her. And even with the Republicans, their messages started getting through. So, you know, it was 1,000 cuts on Hillary. So she started to lose her footing a little bit. She's got great opponents, too, strong opponents. So if she was just running against Biden and Dodd and Richardson, you know, she'd still be the front runner. But Edwards and Obama are giving her a good run for her money.
Right. Do you anticipate anybody dropping out of the race by Friday? And what would it take for somebody to drop out?
Just a dismal showing.
Mm.
But even then, I don't think it would. For example, Ron Paul, the mighty Texan Ron Paul, is he's polling here in the single digits. You know, he's just nowhere, and I don't think he's going to put up a good show on caucus night. But he's going to run in New Hampshire. I mean, he's not going to drop out.
He's got a lot of money.
Yeah, he's got some money, yeah. And he's running a very frugal campaign. So he's keeping that money, unlike John McCain, who at one point was in debt. He's got some money now, so he's doing better. But it's hard to say. It's hard to say. They I think that a lot of them want to push through at least to South Carolina. You know, they just want to keep going and see if they can put anything together, even just for their future political prospects, mm-hmm. not even to win this race anymore. Like Bill Richardson, you know, there's a guy. What's he doing?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe running for vice president. That's mm-hmm. That's what it looks like.
It does look like that to me too. Mm-hmm. That is what he's doing. Yeah. Thanks very much, Diane. Oh, we got to pause for a moment. I get so wrapped up in these conversations, I forget. We're talking with Julie Mason this hour of the program. Julie is White House correspondent for the Houston Chronicle Washington Bureau and is joining us by phone from Des Moines, where she and many other journalists, and we will be in Iowa as well, not Des Moines, but Dubuque on Thursday and Friday, is talking about the final days of the caucuses and how the stories of 2007. I want to ask her more about the Iraq War and if that's just off the political campaign discussion trail in Iowa now, because it certainly was a major story of 2007. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming at the second hour of our program this New Year's morning, we will go back to 1908 and the author of America, 1908, The Dawn of Flight, The Race to the Pole, The Invention of the Model T, and The Making of a Modern Nation. It's a lovely, really interesting book. It grabs you. So we're going to have some fun. And it's a good thing to do on New Year's Day to go back 100 years, don't you think? Julie Mason is with us now. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Certainly, and our memories are short, Julie, but if you look at 2007, when I think about what we did most talk shows on, it certainly was the intricacies of the Iraq War and the surge and America's standing in the world, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It has got to play in. People are saying, well, everybody's concerned about other things now. It seems to me as though people are still concerned about the direction of this war, and Iowa voters would be as well, don't you think?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I do think it's dropped in status a little bit on mm-hmm. the list of when you ask people, what's your big issue? Like, what's your one issue right now? They say health care mm-hmm. or education,
mm-hmm.
and then you say, well, what about the war? And they say, oh, well, yeah, the war. Yeah. So it's a default, but it's not – people aren't, like, shaking their fists anymore about it. It's become sort of a subtext again. It's like, mm-hmm. well, of course the war, mm-hmm. but more personal concerns first.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Let's go to Deborah next from Waukegan. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
We seem at such a critical time, and the question I'm asking myself is, where in a campaign do we see what kind of leader someone is actually going to be? Because I think it's so crucial. I mean, it's really, there are so many important directions for our country to take. There's so many things to be righted. You know, there's so many things in education and the economy and everywhere. And I think it's going to make a huge difference whether somebody can be a uniting leader, and mm-hmm. that is really why I'm for Barack Obama, but I'm really asking myself, this whole process we have, where is there any place in a campaign where we actually do get to find out what kind of a leader of this country somebody would be? And one of the reasons I'm asking myself that is because I don't think Barack showed as well in the debates as he might have, and I thought, well, maybe that's not the best forum, but kind of wondering, you know, do we have a way of you know, it's kind of like marriage is marriage, being a president is being president, there's nothing that's really exactly like it. But where is someone's medal as a leader? Where does it really show in the campaign?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
God, that's such an astute question.
Mm-hmm.
That's so right. I mean, what it comes down to is a leap of faith, because the skills that make a great campaigner are not the skills that make a great leader. Absolutely not. So it just comes down to what your gut tells you, I guess. And I really take that point that the caller's making. Yeah, how do you know who's going to be a good leader? And she likes Obama. Well, can he pull it off, everything he's saying he's going to do? Can he actually do that? Can he get it done? There's no indication.
Will people follow? I'm not for Hillary because I don't think people will follow her, but I have no idea if I'm right.
Right, exactly. And how could you know? And just because she can give a good stump speech, does that mean she can work with Congress?
Yeah.
Who knows? I know it really the system is so flawed, but I guess it's the best one we can think of right now.
Well, right. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Deborah.
You. That's a really good point. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Barbara is next from La Crosse. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. My question is, why are the caucuses always only done in Iowa and New Hampshire? It would seem to me that we'd get a much better cross-section of opinions if different states were used for caucuses, that mm-hmm. they'd be rotated so we'd get more input from people all
yeah.
over the country.
Mm-hmm. It sure would be more interesting if the first caucus were in a place like Illinois, don't you think, Julie?
Oh, yeah. That would be terrific. That would be quite a thing. I wish they would. It's, you know, it's up to the it's up to the states and the parties to sort that out. And you know, we go through this every 4 years, and that's it's a really good point. Yeah, it would be great if someone else could have a first crack at these candidates.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really up to state and party leadership to change it. It's just a tradition that Iowa and New Hampshire go first. It's not in law. But yeah, but they need to change it. Probably, it's I hear nothing but people wanting to change it.
Right.
Even people in Iowa wouldn't mind.
Yeah. Well, it would be interesting, and it would change things pretty dramatically. I guess you wouldn't have the, you know, the five visits with all the candidates, and maybe even some Iowans have had more than that, the personal door-to-door coffee mm-hmm. clutch, et cetera. It would be much more of a media campaign. But if everybody voted on the same day, wouldn't that be interesting?
It would. It would. But it, do you mean everyone in the country?
Right.
Yeah. But I mean... the focused attention really helps, and I think that it's such a big country that with candidates spreading themselves so thin, I don't know if people could make an informed vote. You know, like they might not even see a candidate, and then they'd have to go vote. Whereas here, you know, most of the voters here have seen every candidate at least once.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Barbara. Did you have anything else, Barbara?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
All right, yeah, that's a good question. Thanks very much for the call.
Yeah.
Ann is next from Decorah, Iowa. All right, Ann.
Hey, good morning.
Hello.
I am going to participate in my first ever caucus. I've never claimed a party. I just waited for the candidates to be chosen.
Hmm.
Great, good for you.
Yeah, I'm 54, and as I was growing up, I've always lived in Iowa. I thought the record was that Iowa caucuses had a really good record for picking the winners. And my big issue are the voting machines, and I'm wondering, do either of you know if there's been a noticeable change in the percentage of winners that were picked after you had private companies owning our voting machines, refusing to give up the source code or allowing them to be audited? Has it made a difference? Because I'm thinking once it gets out into the primaries, you're not going to really know what the vote is.
Once again, there's that issue, and it's been in the news the last couple of days. Have we cleaned it up? Are the votes going to be counted, Julie?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that. I know, for example, the Republicans do a straw vote. They don't caucus like the Democrats do. So I don't know the answer. I'm sorry.
But they don't use. Do they use polling machines? They don't. My understanding is, maybe I'm off on this, that they wrote down who the person was and essentially like put it in a hat and then
right.
And then it was kind of, it's not voting machines, is it?
No.
No.
No, I think that's more for the general.
Yeah. Huh. Well, thanks, Ann, very much. Oh, Ann, do you know who you're for yet or not?
I am a Dodd backer.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish that people could have seen. I mean, it's not even the media. When you would watch the debates, they were just forgotten. I mean, it was, in the one debate, finally the crowd started yelling, there's other people up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those debates have been terrible. Throughout the whole process, really bad.
It used to be the League of Women Voters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things have changed so much. Thank you.
Thanks very much for your call.
Bye-bye.
800-486-8655. Frank from Madison. Hi.
Hi, Happy New Year.
You too, Frank.
I would like to ask by what magic three major issues somehow don't get addressed in the pre-campaign and probably won't be in the campaign.
Let's hear it.
One is the war, which has been mentioned, unconstitutional government. You know, the Constitution was violated in egregious fashion this summer. And then finally, America's performance on global warming and the travesty in Bali. And yet no one raises the issue to these candidates. And again, have a Happy New Year.
Thanks, Frank. You too.
Well, climate change is coming up, for one. It is. It's, again, a secondary issue. But the Democrats especially are talking about it. The Republicans, not so much. But Edwards has made it a central part of his platform. And Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, too, to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other two? The, something that happened over the summer?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure about the, by that.
The CIA. Why don't you save the war? Because we're almost out of time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and the war. Everyone's talking about the war, but really, it's not the first thing they mention. It's maybe the second or third thing they mention. The war is in there, but I think that reflects the voters putting the war in the background. So the candidates are doing the same.
Yeah. Where are you going to be Thursday night, Julie?
I'm going to be at the filing center in downtown Des Moines with 2,000 other journalists.
Oh, Julie. I hope one of the candidates gives you a lot of food.
I hope so.
Thanks. You're always a pleasure. Talk to you again.
Okay.
Thanks. Julie Mason, our guest. Julie is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Houston Chronicle, joining us by phone from Des Moines, Iowa. We're going to be in Dubuque, Iowa, Thursday and Friday with live broadcasts, and we hope you'll tune in. It's going to be good. They're going to be good shows. We're going to have chocolate cake. We're going to have us a good old time. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to John Treader. Wish him a Happy New Year. It's only the two of us here today. And, you know, I'm a paid employee. He's a volunteer who got up on New Year's morning to answer phone calls. So thanks to him as well. We'll return following the latest news, which is coming up in a moment.